Hi, this is Michelle Malone from the Hot Toddies.
This is Cliff Beach.
My name is Mia Suzanne Walker. I am from Suzanne's band, and I just want to wish everybody out there a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is Jane Monheit.
This is Michael Sinatra. You're listening to The Sounds of Christmas podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I'm just one episode away from the 200th episode of the Sounds of Christmas podcast, and I wanted to take a moment, actually a bit more than a moment, to thank you for listening and continuing to listen. In the previous episode, I talked about many of the topics and guests I've had on since launching this podcast a few years ago. In this episode, I'd like to focus on the artists. If you listen to the Sounds of Christmas station, you've heard music from a lot of these folks, if not all of them. It's hard to believe, at least it's hard for me to believe, but since I started this podcast, I've had over 50 singers and musicians as guests, and several of them have come on more than once. Michael Sinatra and Suzanne from Suzanne's band were the first artists I was lucky enough to have on this podcast. Michael was working on a new Christmas album.
I like to switch it up. I don't want every song to sound the same. I want different moods. And I wish I could add a little more carols to that one. I had some, but they just weren't ready to go. So in the next one, I'm probably going to have a few more carols, maybe another jazz combo, another big band, et cetera. It's the songs that I enjoyed and that my parents loved and what I grew up listening to when I was younger. I just, the holiday spirit in my family, my mom was really big in the Christmas. She was so huge in the Christmas that she kept the Christmas tree up all year long. It didn't go away. It was still in the corner of the house. Even if it didn't have any instruments, it was still set up. And there were still, she was also into teddy bears too, but so there were like teddy bears everywhere and then some Christmas stuff. Yeah, so that was always fun. But there's no money in making music, really, unless you're a big-time artist with a big label. I enjoy what I do. I don't do this for making money because, you don't make a lot of money. But I love it, and I'll continue to keep doing it. And as far as the album, I'm just happy that I was able to get it out there in time. I know we were coming neck and neck, and I was like, oh, it's already end of October and the album's not out yet. But I'm so excited that we were able to, get to the finish line and get it out and release it. And now I'm just trying to get it heard by as many people as possible and share it with their family and friends. And I'm glad you liked it. Thank you.
Michael has released two Christmas albums, three actually, but the last was supposed to have been an EP. It just had too many songs to technically be an EP. A single of Little Drummer Boy with a full choir, and most recently, a collection, kind of a best of set, culled from his Christmas releases. Suzanne from Suzanne's band joined us as she was working on a new Christmas single.
Lyric-wise, there were some changes. Changes to the first and second verse and some connectivity and things like that, where I had an outside party, a third party, look at the song and just look at it for how it made sense. Maybe I wanted to switch a word here or there to connect this phrase better or, those types of things. So as far as the song straying from my original thought, it didn't have too much of a difference other than a word tweak here and there or phrase. So that made that nice. And as far as the production side of it and instrumentation, I think that was pretty much what I envisioned it. I thought we might just end up with a little acoustic guitar and some slight percussion, but we noticed that by adding the strings and things like that into it, that it didn't change things too much. It just kind of added to it and gave it more support. as a song, and it made it a little bit more full, but didn't, you know, bazooka the butterfly, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, because you don't want to just keep building and building on something, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we got a rock ballad now because we added all this stuff, you know. we managed to keep its integrity from its intention and still come out okay. From a production and a studio side, it's always a little bit more involved, I think, than you think it is, especially because this was my first song literally to actually produce as well. So that was a little bit different, getting into that mix and knowing what I needed to do and how I needed to coordinate things and learning some of the terminology and trying to communicate a little bit better through all this. And that applies to this and to the album itself, which is coming out around February as well. So that'll be exciting to have all this new music out there at the same time. It'll be great.
This single was Underneath the Tree, the band's follow-up to their previous Christmas single, One More Night of Christmas. Since then, Suzanne's band has released the non-Christmas album, Ice and Fire. Both Michael and Suzanne let me sort of tag along through the process, appearing several times with updates on how their new music was shaping up. The next artist I had on was Paul Barrer from Little Feet, though that's kind of cheating. It was actually part of an interview Paul did with me on the Sounds of Christmas station back in 2014. He had joined me to talk about a couple of Christmas songs he had done to help the charity's Sweet Relief Musicians Fund and Safety Harbor Kids.
It's actually myself and Fred Tackett on that record. And Fred and I do an acoustic duet tours when Little Feet's not working. So his daughter, Petri, is the founder of Safety Harbor Kids. This is inner city kids, you know, just with the mentoring programs, and they teach them music and art, and they just, you know, it's just a wonderful thing, especially around Christmas time.
For anyone that would like to find out a little bit more about them and how you can help, you can visit them at safetyharborkids.org. And you can also find the song that Paul and Fred did, along with an entire album made for Safety Harbor Kids, which also features Christmas songs from Jackson Brown, Billy Idol, and Sheila E., among others. You can find that at all your favorite online retailers. It's a great collection, and it's a terrific cause. And speaking of great causes, you've also been involved with Sweet Relief, the Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, which is an organization that helps out singers and bands and anyone in the music business who, well, let's face it, most do this for the love of music. And that doesn't come with medical or dental, and sometimes you need some help. Now, this personally touched you and the band Little Feet when your friend and bandmate, legendary drummer Richie Hayward, was diagnosed with liver cancer.
Yes, he was, you know, he was having to have lots of treatments and so forth, and he didn't have, you know, health care. So the Sweet Relief people are, you know, they're just wonderful. It's like we never knew about them, but they really help a lot of musicians, you know, not just in Los Angeles, but all over the country. And so when we were thinking, well, what can we do for Richie, you know, to try and raise some funds for his medical costs and so forth, well, we thought, why not do a song? A gentleman named Steve Krismar in Philadelphia wrote this song, and he sent it out to me, and he said, do you think you can put a little band together and record this, and we'll put it out on iTunes, and whatever comes in, we'll give to his fund at the Sweet Relief. So, you know, we said, no problem. And so Kenny Gradney, the bassist, and myself, we lined up Tony Bonagle, who played drums, and Mike Finnegan, who played keyboards, and Leo Nascentelli played guitar with me, and Teresa James, and Deborah Dobson came in and sang backgrounds, and Deborah did some percussion, and then we had the Texicali horns, Joe Sublett, and Daryl Leonard come in and play horns on it, and we decided to call ourselves the North Pole All-Stars. Actually, we wanted to call ourselves the North Pole Dancers, but somebody thought that would be wrong, so... But it was a great thing to do, and so, you know, what we decided to do was to you know, since Christmas is such a lovely time of year, it comes around every year, you know, to keep the song out there and raise funds for Sweet Relief to help other musicians. And so that's what we're, everybody's kind of signed off on the song, and we're hoping that people will go and download it and what have you, and just keep the ball rolling.
Sadly, Paul passed away about 5 years ago. I feel very fortunate that I was able to chat with him, and enormously grateful that he made the time for me. Out of all the artists I have gotten to talk to on this podcast, there are two that have each been on three times, Cliff Beach and Rhea Stevens. Cliff has been on to talk about many of his projects, including two Christmas singles and his album, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
I've always wanted to record a Christmas holiday album. There's so many great Christmas music repertoire, obviously the traditional and gospel and hymn type stuff all the way through, you know, the jazz era into the 1950s, 60s with a lot of great music. And last year during the pandemic, I was commissioned by the City of Los Angeles Rec and Parks Department to put on a virtual Christmas concert. We recorded in October, it was released into December of 2020. And so gathering all the assets to put that show together with me and my arranger, Evan Mackey, who arranges my horn parts, we had created a great flow of jazz and blues and R&B and soul music put together for that concert. And so I thought, wow, I've always wanted to do a Christmas album. And I've teased a few Christmas singles. I feel like this is the time for us to do it because we had just done all these fresh arrangements. Let's go into the studio after Christmas. So in January of this year, we went into the studio to start recording the basic tracks at Moose Cat Recording in Los Angeles to be able to get that done. So I've always loved Christmas music. Christmas is my favorite time of year. I am a December baby, born on December 18th, a week before Christmas, many, many years ago. And so it just always had a special place in my heart. And there's so many iconic Christmas albums from Nat King Cole to Frank Sinatra to Dean Martin, all those people, and Bing Crosby and Burl Ives. And I love all of that. But then I also love, you know, some of the soulful stuff done by Motown and James Brown and Clarence Carter and Rufus Thomas and a bunch of other people. So I wanted to be able to showcase a good mix of all of those, some songs that are really well known, some songs that are kind of B-sides, lesser known, but still by great artists. And then obviously I wanted to write an original song for that concert, which I then also put as the title track for the album.
Cliff's latest album is the jazz-flavored tribute to Ella Fitzgerald called You Showed Me the Way. He also has a new one due this fall called Beach Please. And the first single for that, The Work, is due later this month. Rhea has been on to talk about her projects, including her last two Christmas albums, Tis the Season and Santa's Taken Over the Town.
I think what to me is so exciting about Christmas time is that it's everybody's collective energy of pitching in and everybody's unique holiday spirit that's contributing to the joy of the season. So like, really, we're all embodying Santa in our lives for our families, our friends, our colleagues. And it is that collective energy that makes the holidays so special. So Santa's Taken Over the Town is like, you know, okay, you know, I'll fill up your cup, you fill up my cup. Like we're all gonna make this thing happen together, and nobody's gonna run out of energy because the energy is it's in a constant cycle. We're all pitching in, we're all making this thing happen. But Santa's Taken Over the Town was written more literally, like, okay, you know, we're, you know, mama needs a break, papa needs a drink. Oh, for heaven's sake, everybody's on the brink. Let's have some fun. Let Santa take over the town. It's all the hustle bustle of, you know, we got to get to this festive thing and that festive thing. And, you know, the kids are driving mom crazy, and they're, you know, even the kids are like wah! And the kids are saying, let Santa take over the town. We can't wait anymore. So every character in that song is on edge. They're on edge and cannot wait for the party, basically.
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Gonna do it again.
Yeah, that's a really, really fun song. I love that we had kind of a rockabilly vibe on that. And it's like, it's very high octane, high energy. I think that's like the most high energy song on the record. I mean, they're all very spirited on this record, but that one is like, it's got the most rock, like rah, you know, it's just such a fun song.
Ray's latest release is the non-Christmas single, Let's Have Some Fun, which was released in July. There are a bunch of artists that have each been on this podcast twice so far. Mike from Vista Blue has come on to talk about his band's Christmas music and their Halloween music, among other things.
Christmas music, I just loved. Like, and so ever since I was a teenager, like, I could listen to Bing Crosby's Merry Christmas at any point of the year. And I just really started to fall in love with it as a teenager, Christmas music in general. And so when we started a band, I mean, our first band that was decent was like 1999 or so. And so we immediately, we had a whole like DIY scene going in New Orleans, and we'd book shows at like just lots of little DIY places. And so we started a little label just to put out like cassettes and CDR releases for our friends in the late 90s. And so one of the things we did was like a compilation where we all tried to write a song or cover a song. And that was when I wrote, my first Christmas song is probably 99. And I loved it. I loved the experience of not only writing a song that I could play live at a concert, but a Christmas song that we could play at like a Christmas show or something. And so we tried to do that compilation every year. That first one was on a cassette. And then we started doing CDRs after that. And we would send them out like to family and friends, kind of like a Christmas card. So, I mean, like, we'd have maybe 12 people involved in sort of writing different songs or covering different songs. And we just get a CDR out maybe to like a few friends at work, maybe like 40 or 50 copies total, you know, total with everybody involved. And to us, it was kind of like a Christmas card, but it was something that we could do. And we'd start around Thanksgiving, maybe a little earlier for some of us, a little later for some of us. And we do this, and it was fun because we could relate to each other and say, hey, what are you doing? Man, I got to record this vocal. Can somebody help me with this vocal? Can somebody come over and do it? And it really like helped us to like bond every year at Christmas time. And we did that for a few years. And then after Katrina, everybody got scattered. And about 2010, we started again, and we've done it every year since 2010. And now it means even more to me because it's people that I don't see. One of my best friends, Rusty, who I do the Christmas podcast with, we do a band together called Tambourine Girlfriend. We do this, we talk about it kind of all year, but I haven't seen him since 2003, I think, was the last time we played a show together in person. And he's one of my best friends. I haven't seen him in 18 years, but we talk almost every day on the internet. And one of the main things that we talk about throughout the year really is Christmas music and hey, we're going to write this song, or maybe we can do this. And so I think it's not only my love for the music, but the fact that after Katrina, now that I'm so scattered from everyone that I knew for years, it's just a way that we can keep in touch. And now, of course, it's a digital, like a link we'll send out to some friends. And, you know, there's a few friends that look forward to it every year. I might only get to 30 or 40 people. But the bonus is, like, it turns out there's some really good songs in there. There's a lot of goofy stuff. We just make up some silly songs, you know. But then, like, there'll just be, like, a really good song. The single we did last year, Nobody Told Me It Was Christmas, was a song that Rusty wrote for that compilation that was just amazing. And so the next year, last year, you know, I recorded it with Vista Blue. I just stole his song and just, you know, put my spin on it. And that's where that came from. That song would not exist if it wasn't for this goofy little compilation that I do with my friends every year. So it's not only my love of the music, but my love of the process of bonding with friends and staying connected with friends through this process. Because for some friends, it's fantasy football, you know, podcasting, but with this group of friends, it's Christmas music.
Since last year's EP, Christmas Every Day, Vista Blue has released a string of singles, including two more baseball-themed releases already this summer. The Help Me Ron EP and the single No Baseball at the Summer Olympics. Deb Bowman joined us a couple years ago to talk about her Christmas album, A Big Love Holiday. And then she came back last year with a new single, a cover of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
You know, this arrangement arranged by Dean Franson, the incredible Dean Franson, who was the producer and arranger of my very first record in 2011, Addicted to Love Songs. We had kind of reconnected in a way where he arranged and music directed my recent project, which will come out next year. But in the process of that, I was like, I would love to lay down a Christmas single in these recording sessions, which happened this past summer. And we had been performing off and on for many moons, a salsa version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. It was always called, in our mind, it was always called Have Yourself a Salsa Merry Christmas. And it came to life in the studio. And that's really it. It was kind of like we went into the project with the mindset of capturing enough to maybe produce a new record, my fourth album coming out. And I did some other things, which is a message for another day. But we captured this Christmas tune, and I'm really proud of it. And the Jedi, Jeff Jones, who is the producer of this future record, who mixed and engineered this recording. I just really am proud of it.
Liz Kennedy joined me to talk about her Christmas singles. First, Snowman Moon, A Christmas Crime, and Snow in San Francisco.
It came from being 25 in San Francisco. After college, I moved to San Francisco. And in 1975, there was a snowstorm. And it was terribly exciting because the whole world felt different. I was inside when it started and a huge storm came. But it didn't feel like there was rain on the roof. It all felt different, the whole pressure of everything. And I looked outside and it was snowing in a city that never sees snow. And snow, I mean, real snow, not just snow in the air, but it was holding on the ground. And I've never forgotten how fun. I went out and I skied in my tennis shoes and it just made everyone turn into kids. And it just felt like Christmas to me at the time. So I like kind of unusual Christmas songs. And even though it was not Christmas Day, it was the wrong month and it was the wrong day. But it felt like I was finally having my first Christmas experience in the city of San Francisco. So I decided to write a song about it. And there was footage about that day. And when I saw that, I thought, well, great. I've got a video and I've got an idea of a song that I tucked away in my brain since I was 25, the experience of that.
I think Liz has a new album on the way, not a Christmas album. And she's had a couple singles recently, Waving at Trains and Every Young Girl. I also think she has a new single coming out any day now. And the rumor is she also has a new single for this coming Christmas. Linda Imperial also came on to introduce me to her Christmas singles, first Christmas You and Me, and last year, Christmas in the Tropics.
It's my favorite time of year, and it's really hard if you're alone. And just being with people you care about is just a wonderful, magical feeling. The holiday spirit is everywhere, and I wanted to capture that magic that people have, you know, it brings out the happiness in people, the merriment, the humanity, the excitement of the holiday. And it encourages people to be nicer to one another, to care about one another. And Christmas, You and Me, I don't like being alone at Christmas. So I like having that special someone to enjoy the beauty of and the magic of Christmas. I never really thought of doing a Christmas song, but when I thought about it, I went, oh my goodness, because I love Christmas and I just Drummer Boy. that was my first love in Christmas songs. And it just, it made me very emotional when I heard it as a child. And it has a longevity that I look forward to. You know, I always look forward to the holidays and hearing Christmas songs and going in and out of places that have that holiday spirit. It really, it puts me in a great mood. It makes me happy and hopeful.
I think Linda has a new non-Christmas single due out any day now. Tommy Prophet came on a couple years ago to talk about his cinematic music project that finally came to fruition with the release of his album, The Birth of a King. He came back on a couple years later to talk about how he was able to take that album to the stage for an amazing live concert.
That was kind of a dream of mine all along, but I just didn't think it'd be possible. Everyone was like, there's no way. There's no way you could pull together, you know, all 20 artists and 50-piece orchestra, and I wanted like 100-person choir live. And I don't even really do live shows, right? I just sit in my studio these days in my sweatpants and make music. I'm like, I don't sell tickets. And man, we just went for it. I just felt like it was a thing that God opened the door for and was asking me to do. And I don't know why, but I just kind of went for it. And yeah, it was a crazy thing. We lined it all up. We went on sale and it sold out in less than 24 hours. And it was one of the best nights of my life.
You had, I think you said 20 guest artists, yep. A 60-piece orchestra, 100-person choir. That must have been some kind of magic to get all of that orchestrated to be able to do this.
Yeah, it took almost a year and a half just to set it up, to organize it all, to line it up. And yeah, it was crazy. It was so much work, so hard, but so worth it and so fun. And we recorded, you know, and filmed the whole thing. And, you know, that's kind of a nerve-wracking thing because, you know, the studio record was kind of a baby passion project of mine that I never wanted to touch, you know. And I was like, man, if we do it live, you don't really know what you're going to have until you do it and you record it and then you look at it all after, right? But man, the team, the crew that filmed it and recorded it, they just did such a good job, and it just turned out so well. It's my favorite project I've ever been a part of.
Tommy's bringing The Birth of the King back to the Opry this December, though I think it's almost sold out, so you want to check his website and get your tickets before they're gone. I think it was about 10 months into this podcast when The Sounds of Christmas went international with our first guest from Australia, Paul Kelly.
I've always liked Christmas, and it's been a big thing in my family since we were children. You know, I come from a big family, big Catholic family, so we always celebrated Christmas. And over the years, as we've grown up and scattered and lived in different places, Christmas was always a way of us getting back together. And there's a lot of Christmas music I like. I think one of the things about Christmas music is that it's so diverse. You have a lot of sacred music, carols, you have serious carols and fun carols. There's all kinds of songs about Christmas. Christmas is a blend of many different traditions. So it's thrown up a lot of music over the years. In some ways, it's thrown up so much music that we often can't, you know, miss the gems out of all the dross. I mean, so, but there's a lot of great Christmas music out there. And I started thinking about doing an album a few years back, and just started recording a song here and a song there. And then early this year, we went to the studio and, you know, did most of the songs then. And the idea of the record was to do it with a number of different guests. Again, because of the variety of the music that we were doing, it needed a variety of voices.
And this is quite a huge, I don't want to even call it an album, a collection. You've got 22 songs on this. How did you whittle it down or pick and choose what you were going to record?
I originally thought I'll do a single album. But then once I realized we had this, of all the songs I was looking at and that I thought that'd be good to record, I realized it was had such so many of the songs were quite different to each other. I thought it would only make sense on a bigger canvas. So we have a gospel song like Virgin Mary Had One Son. We have some ancient carols. Coventry Carol was from the 16th century. We have straight up pop songs like Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. We've got, you know, some folk songs like The Fenley Beasts. And all these come out of the different traditions of Christmas. So I quickly realised that to make things hang together, I needed to stretch it out to into a double album, and that's how it ended up with 22 songs. Could have done a whole lot more. So there's always the chance of somewhere down the track doing another album.
I think it was about a year later when I reconnected with Australia, this time to talk to Rhonda Birchmore and Jack Earle.
Jack came over and we recorded this one single because there was a lot of love out there for people couldn't believe that I hadn't done, you know, an album. And I think, you know, we released it as a kind of gift to our fans. And then that from there, Jack had the incredible, we had a bit of time on our hands to come up with these incredible arrangements that he tailored for me and reimagined, you know, your typical American songbook songs for Christmas, but kind of turned them on their head. And we finally, after 6 or 7 cancellations, got a window of time to go into Alan Eaton's, a very old recording studio with a lot of history here in Melbourne, with the whole band as one. And that was pretty special.
It's very special. It just doesn't happen anymore. Like, to find a room of that size, Alan Eaton's, the credits are miles long, but one of their main sort of gigs these days is the recording studio really is a dying art form, I'm afraid. But lots of film scores get made at Alan Eaton Studios because they can fit the full orchestra in. So there's not many recording studios in Melbourne left that can fit the full 18-piece, 20 people in the one space. And I was pretty adamant that we record all together to get that energy and to get that. So we're all breathing the same air and all in the same mindset, in the same energy of the space. And Alan Eaton's has that sort of funky, you know, it's got a bit of a funky smell, and the carpets are a bit stained,
and there's rats running around, and it's damp because it's just, and with no one being in there. But it was so exciting, and as Jack said, that was his wish. I mean, so many people through COVID did their projects remotely from their, you know, home studios and, you know, bits and pieces. But to have the whole unit in it, if I can say, Ken, there were tears amongst these grown men when they actually played live together as a group, because this was the first time on this album that they played together in 2 years, and I think when you listen to the tracks, you can hear the joy of and the absolute aliveness, if that's a word, it's probably not, of the and energy of Jack and the band and myself.
I don't think Rhonda's released any new music since then, Christmas or not, but she has appeared in several stage productions. Most recently, she starred in the autobiographical music Tall Tales. Paul has had a string of compilation albums out encompassing different kinds of songs from his amazing career, in addition to several singles. The latest single is Taught by Experts, which is from his upcoming album, Fever Longing Still. Paul also has at least one film in the works. The one I know about is based on his Christmas song, How to Make Gravy, and it's due this coming holiday season. And while we're talking about connecting internationally, Christine Amory and David Lanz connected from Cyprus to talk about their latest Christmas singles.
I was always a romantic, and for me, I grew up in Norway, and I didn't really particularly like the snow other than Christmas. And for me, Christmas was very romantic to be, you know, go to church and it would be snowing big white petals. And I was just beautiful, crisp and white, and yeah, just lots of love and light. And I always loved Christmas music. It's something joyful and positive about it. So when David suggested, oh, let's make some music, you know, we just decided that Christmas was the right way to go.
Yeah. And I kept telling Christine, I said, well, if you're going to continue to be an artist, people at some point almost expect every artist to put out their Christmas album. I mean, look at Neil Diamond. Yeah. God bless him. He's Jewish, you know, and he's doing Christmas music. So that was part of the motivation. It was just that we wanted to make a statement that would, you know, be fresh and come out every year. It's a nice blend of classic carols and a lot of music that we wrote ourselves that we were hoping to expand the genre a bit.
And we keep doing it. We just released last year Silent Night and new version of ours of that. And this year, Mary, did you know our version?
Yes.
Yeah.
Since then, David released the album Valentine Hill earlier this year, and both David and Christine released the single Beautiful One, which I believe is from an upcoming album, and that single came out just a couple months ago. While Kevin McGrath isn't a singer or musician, he is responsible for a couple of amazing Christmas compilations, which he put together for a UK charity.
Crisis UK is a prominent homeless charity in the UK, and it has a specific program each year which it raises money for called Crisis at Christmas, where the aim is to provide a Christmas meal, a bed, medical health checkups, and ongoing guidance and advice for anybody that comes through the door there.
It seems like an obvious choice for an organization to support, especially at this time of year. Was there anything more to it that led you to connect with them?
Yeah, I mean, I've always, on an individual basis, as a family, we've always donated to Crisis at Christmas. I've been very lucky in that I grew up in a happy home, and I've had a happy family life myself with my wife and our children. So we've loved Christmas and we've loved Christmas music, but I'm very familiar with, you know, the fact that doesn't chime with a lot of people. A lot of people's, sadly, experience of Christmas is a, you know, can be a harsh one, can be a less fortunate one. So thinking about those kinds of people at Christmas seems a good thing to do. And Crisis, I think, it touches my heart because of that. Yeah.
Well, he insisted he would never go through all that to put out another Christmas compilation. He wound up doing it again the following year and coming back on this podcast to talk about it. Bren Stanley came on to talk about her earlier Christmas single, Selfie with Santa, and her album, Classic Christmas.
You know, it's so funny. It was always on my radar. And before I moved to Los Angeles, before I had anything recorded, I kept saying to people, you know, I just really want to record a Christmas album. And they laughed because they said, you know, before you record a Christmas album, let's do some other things first. So first I recorded an original album, and then I did a classic album with things that could be played year round, which kind of makes sense. I get that. And then I was able to finally do the Christmas album, and it just feels right. That's kind of how I feel about it. I love it. Love the Christmas season and the holiday season.
Were the songs that wound up on Classic Christmas, were they stuff that other people said, you should do this and you should do this or you should do this? Or were they a mix of your ideas and theirs, or was it all yours?
You know what? I can actually take credit for that, because I was sitting by my fireplace and I remember my producer saying to me, you know, you need to come up with some holiday songs that you love that really speak to you. And I mean, with that direction, that helped me. And I just would spend hours in front of a fire listening to different artists and what spoke to my heart. And that was kind of easy, because Bing Crosby and Nat King Cole have always been that for me. And I started with them, but then I kind of explored into other artists. I never knew Elvis Presley sang any Christmas songs ever. And I discovered that Santa Bring My Baby Back to Me song. And I just was like, this is a gem. This is amazing. And I told my executive producer about it, and he said, you're not going to believe this, but that is my favorite Christmas song of all time. I was like, well, then that's definitely going on the album. That's meant to be. That's too cool.
I don't think Bryn has released any new music since the Christmas album, but she does have a children's book called Glow that I believe is due later this summer. Sarah Reeves had a string of Christmas singles before she did an entire Christmas album, but she came on here to talk to me about More the Merrier.
So I've actually been working on this Christmas album since April of this year, which, you know, is a little hard to get in the Christmas spirit when it's hot outside. So a lot of these songs, you know, it's 100-degree weather in the summer, and I'm going in knowing that I'm about to write a Christmas song. And so we would kind of go into rooms, and usually there's some kind of monitor TV screen, and we would put on, like, you know, the fireplace, that just kind of stays on the screen. I think it's on Netflix. And or we would bring in, you know, Christmas lights or some kind of Christmas decoration to make it feel like Christmas, to make it feel cozy so that we could go in and really be inspired to write and record these Christmas songs. So that helped a little bit. But even writing the originals on the album, I had to kind of be particular about the writers that I was partnering with and the producers, just to make sure that they had some kind of history of that that jazz, you know, background, or just a knowledge and understanding of that classic feel that we accomplished for this record. So I really had to kind of get in that mindset, and at times would be like, okay, what would Ella do here for this melody, you know? And we really, everything just for me, it was very important that it was going to sound as classic and as timeless as possible. So yeah, it was fun. I will say, you know, I'm ready for Christmas this year because I've been in Christmas mode. So I'm like, okay, it's time. I'm ready for the weather to start getting cool.
Since then, Sarah has released a deluxe version of More the Merrier, and last year she released the non-Christmas album Best Days, and then just this past May, a new single, More Than Enough. Sarah is also appearing in Tommy Prophet's upcoming live performance of The Birth of the King. Corinne Cook came on to talk about her single, A Soldier's Christmas, a semi-autobiographical song about her time overseas serving in the military at Christmas time.
The inspiration for A Soldier's Holiday was really about trying to depict the point of view from a woman in the military. Because there's a lot of songs about men in the military that are out there, and I haven't heard many or any about women. So my thought was, you know, I was in the military, and, you know, I wasn't necessarily in the same situation as the woman in the song, but I'm sure there's lots of women who are deployed during the holidays and are missing their family. And I wanted to kind of show that, not in a negative light, but just more as, you know, it would be nice to be home, but we have to still, you know, do our job in the military, and we still have to protect our country. And you know, we're here for a reason, but also to show that, you know, hey, I'm missing home too, just like the men that are deployed do.
Since that single was released, Corinne has also released the non-Christmas album, Yes, I Can. Dan Ashley, who is a popular news anchor in San Francisco, came on to talk about a bunch of things, including his Christmas single, Favorite Time of Year.
You know, it is truly my favorite time of year. And I just love everything that the season seems to represent. There's that period of time between Thanksgiving and Christmas where we all sort of treat one another a little more kindly, I think. And there's a sort of a spirit in the air. And I'm a sappy guy. I'll tell you right now, Ken, I believe in all of that stuff. I watch the same Christmas movies every single year. I just think the spirit of the season is wonderful. So I wanted to record a Christmas song, and I'm actually going to do a Christmas album at some point here. And I was set to record a different song, and I just didn't feel like it was right. So I searched literally days before we were going to record. I searched for a different song. I have one that is partially written that I've written that I'm going to record, but I needed something that I thought would really captivate people and interest people, but I didn't want something that everybody's done. So I found this great song called My Favorite Time of Year, written by a guy named Lee Hagerwood of the Florence Street Band. He's in the UK. I'd never heard the song, and I happened to hear it, and literally 8 bars in, Ken, I thought, this is the song. I love the vibe and the message, and it's you've never heard it, but it's familiar at the same time. So I recorded it. I talked to Lee in England, and he was very sweet to let me record it. And he actually told me when I sent him the version, he said, you know, of the people that have covered this, yours is my favorite version. So that meant a lot to me.
Since that single came out, Dan has also released the album Out There and the single You're a Friend of Mine with Narada Michael Walden. I also believe Dan has a new Christmas single on the way in just a few months. Judy Pankhouse came on to talk about her latest Christmas single, Christmas Time in Maine, with Kevin Scott Hall, as well as her other Christmas music going back to her very popular House on Christmas Street.
I was driving in the car with my husband, and I was talking about, you know, I was excited because
I was known as a children's musician, but I really wanted to do a Christmas album. It's always been my dream to do a Christmas album. So I said, I'll do a Christmas album for kids. And I was thinking about what songs I could write for this album about things that had never been done before. And I said, you know what? Everywhere that we have lived, and this was before people were synchronizing their lights to music. This was in 1998. I said, there's been that one house in the town. You ask somebody, where's the house that's big time decorated for Christmas? And everybody always knows where it is. And I said, but nobody has ever written a song about that house. And I'm going to write the song about that house. And then immediately the chorus came to mind. It like just fell out of my mouth. And, you know, I got home and I sat down at the piano and I figured out the chords and the song practically wrote itself. And there are some lyrics in it that people think are funny where I say, you know, where we every year Thanksgiving Day while we digest our turkey. And I've often thought I should go back and change that. In fact, when I redid it in 2014, I did change it to Enjoy Our Turkey. But, you know, I kind of like the quirky digest our turkey too. And at that point, I didn't realize that people spent months putting up their Christmas displays. So I said, the family puts up its display, but they don't put it up. They just light it up on Thanksgiving. But yes, that was the exact moment. And still to this day, I don't know, Ken, you know more Christmas music than I do. Are there other songs out there about that house?
Nothing leaps to mind. And the handful that I can think of are more novelty kind of songs that are more based on the Griswolds and Christmas Vacation than than anything real.
Someone interviewing me once asked me what I thought about the song taking off when it was obviously written as, you know, being sarcastic, that I was making fun of those houses. And I said, that you are nuts. I said, that song is written completely sincerely. I'm not being sarcastic at all. I love those houses. I love Santa Claus on the Roof. That's the thing I always looked for when I was a little girl. But this person interviewing me was one of those cynical people. You know, I said, you got it all wrong, buddy. That song is about as sincere as it could possibly get.
Judy has also worked with Grant Malloy Smith, and I think she appears on his upcoming album. And she also was on his Christmas album, The Christmas Heart. Grant came on to talk about that album and the possibility of more Christmas music in his future.
I liked, because of the 10 songs, 8 of them are traditional ones. They're, you know, songs that are quite old. They're in the public domain, like, you know, O Holy Night, A Joy to the World. Mm-hmm. These songs are all from the 1800s, a few of them from the early 1900s. And we've heard them 1,000 times. You know, sure. You've heard Silent Night a million times. You've heard, you know, Oh Holy Night or The First Noel, you know, 1 trillion times. I thought, if I'm going to do this, I have to do something different. I can't just do it the same way. I've heard it a million times. I want to recognize the song. I don't want to make it so different that people go, why am I listening to this? It should still feel like a Christmas song. It should carry the same feeling, you know, and make you feel the same. But I wanted to express them differently than I've ever heard anybody do them before. So some are kind of gospel-y, some are in my rootsy style. A couple of them are very jazz-like. But I don't know, I took off all of my filters and I just said, I'm just going to do whatever I feel. Because this is not an American roots record necessarily. It's a Christmas record. And so it doesn't have to be one style. It might be easier if it were, but I didn't care. I just wanted to do the songs in the most interesting way I could think to do them, in a way that if I could do it. Like, I wouldn't do them as a classical thing because that's not who I am. And, you know, I don't want to rent an orchestra for $10,000 an hour either. So I had to do it within reason, you know, with what I could afford to do. But I really enjoyed expressing, you know, so many different styles, particularly the jazz ones. Those were really challenging and a lot of fun to do.
Grant continues his American Stories series with his latest album, Mississippi. I didn't want to show preferential treatment, but I think I've gone on long enough without mentioning my wife, Lisa. Lisa released her Christmas album back in 2009, but she's also written over 40 novels, so she came on to talk about Christmas music and her Christmas-themed book that had just come out.
Oh, the CD was very fun because my favorite accompanist was all over it, making his own arrangements of the songs. Steve Sivkovich is a gifted accompanist, and he made it so much fun. All of the arrangements were basically his. He's one of those people who can embellish anything. And our production guy, who was the engineer who was making magic, found kids to help sing backup on Christmas Vacation. And anyway, it was very fun, very holiday-ish. Got you in the mood for the holiday times. It was good.
I honestly can't remember if the magic of Christmas, the whole album, the idea of it was my idea that I tried to push on you to make you do, or if this is something that you wanted to do. Do you remember?
Well, I had started the Broadway show tune CD, I think before we got married, before you were even on the West Coast. And I thought that I was done. And Ken has an online Christmas radio station, and he's really into Christmas music. And I have always been a church musician my entire adult life. And so I have a huge repertoire of Christmas music. And I think that you probably said we should record it, but I put together the song list, I think, with Steve, and we picked our favorites. Christmas Vacation was totally Ken's idea because I love that movie, and he tracked down trying to get the rights so that we could record it. So that was all Ken, but I think the rest of it was mine. I think so.
Were there any particular artists or Christmas songs that sort of inspired you along the way to record the songs that you did?
No, they were pretty much inspired by my favorites, also Steve's favorites. Perfect Christmas Night was fun because that's from The Grinch, which I love. And I'm trying to think the other songs. The other songs were pretty much classics. I did Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer because that's my daughter's favorite Christmas song. And Steve and I had so much fun on the second verse. We kind of took off and did our own thing, and that was very fun. So she approved. but the rest of them, I think, were just classics that I love and that I loved singing with Steve because he really made them come alive. So it was fun.
Lisa hasn't recorded any new music, but she has released a lot of books. And if you like paranormal romance, you should check them out. Just search for her on Amazon. Rosalie Drysdale came on following the release of her Christmas album, Let Your Heart Be Light.
What I try to do is take some traditional songs, some not traditional songs, and all of them are covers. I didn't do any original on this album. There's 11 tunes on it. And I did a cross-section of traditional sort of Christian ones and also then, you know, secular songs, Winter Wonderland, the Christmas song, that kind of thing. So I took a song, for example, Tiny Little Baby, which I'd never heard of. Somebody from, I think, Australia had sent us this song and said, we'd love to hear your rendition of it. So the rendition we found of Tiny Little Baby was a male choir. And then another was a children's choir. So I just took that song and I turned it into something bluesy. So it's got a kind of a funk bluesy. And I love how that one turned out. We did the same thing with Go Tell It on the Mountain. So what I want to say is I've taken a lot of these songs and put a different arrangement and a different feel to it. So like We Three Kings, for example, you know, that one goes, We Three Kings mm-hmm. of Orient are. So it's in a minor tune. Well, I took it to that... what's it called again? You know what? I'm just going to turn this, but I'm just going to play for you. Just an example. I like to be creative. I like to just change things, put it into a different mode. And this is what I did with that one. I think this is the key I played it in. Anyway, so this is how I did it. Remember that? So I went with that. We Three Kings of Orient Hall. So I changed it. It's a recognizable song, but I changed it into that because why not do something different with it?
Since then, Rosalie has released a string of singles, including a version of Mary Did You Know and Where Are You Christmas, though I think that one is only available through her website. I think her latest is the non-Christmas single, The Road Ahead. Believe it or not, it was only recently that Carla Bonoff got around to recording a Christmas album. She came on to talk about Silent Night.
Well, you know, I think because all of our concerts were postponed because of COVID, and I was suddenly looking at, you know, a 9 month to a year landscape of not traveling, it seemed like, you know, after we kind of got past the making bread and cleaning up your closets part, it was like, well, there must be something else that we can be doing with our time. So I thought it would be fun to just record one or two Christmas songs. Really, that's all we were going to do, is just one or two and put them out for fun or see if they could get licensed somewhere. And I started recording with my friend Sean McHugh, who lives also where I live. And we kind of created a COVID bubble where we could work just with each other and maybe one or two other people. And we just started doing them, and they were so much fun that we just kept going, and it became a CD, you know, really unbeknownst to me. It wasn't my plan, but, you know, I didn't have enough songs really for a new album, but it just seemed like something to kind of keep the time going, and it ended up being very creative and super fun.
The album's called Silent Night, and most of the songs that are on there are non-secular. There's the title song, Away in a Manger, O Holy Night, Angels We Have Heard on High, and then kind of right in the middle is your cover of Joni Mitchell's River, which really fits nicely in with these other more traditional songs. How did you happen to pick that one to cover?
Well, that's always been one of my favorite songs, just, you know, in general, and also one of my favorite Christmas songs. I think a lot of people relate to that loneliness on Christmas as well. She wrote that at the time about having just broken up with someone, and so she was sad, and it just seemed like a great song to include, you know, because a lot of the other ones are, you know, they're very Christmassy, but it was an opportunity for me to record one of her songs, which I really have never done.
Carla has given Silent Night the deluxe treatment, featuring a duet with Michael McDonald and a cover of the Christmas song. Pete Hopkins came on to talk about his Christmas single, Love Come Around, and its connection to the Beatles.
Come Around was originally, it was just called Come Around, and it was a completely different song. It was slower. It had the same melody, mostly, but it had a totally different lyrical story, and it was kind of like a tearjerker love ballad kind of thing, one of those sorts of songs. I had been having that. I've had that song around for some years, longer than any of the things that we've been talking about. And another time, I got chosen to do a very special concert called Rock with the Legends, where I opened up for all these like really, 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 really famous people and their bands. I was the opening act, and I made a good impression, because at like, I don't know, 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. or something, I got invited to come to the hotel where, unbeknownst to me, they were all there just waiting to cheer for me. Point is, I made a lot of really famous friends that night. And a few years later, I actually had the privilege of recording with some of them. And most notably, Mr. Alan White, who plays in Yes as the drummer, and who also played with John Lennon and George Harrison. He came in and he wanted to work with me on this Come Around song. So we got there and we're jamming on the song, you know, because when you get in the studio with musicians, that's kind of what you do. And for whatever reason, and I don't know exactly why, maybe I was real happy to be there, or they were, or something, the tempo just went right up on it, and it ended up becoming, instead of this like slow ballad, it turned into this kind of upbeat reggae vibe kind of thing. And that is how we recorded Come Around. You know, then some years go by, and I'm looking at it, and I start to realize, you know, I don't think that the lyrics match the sound of this music anymore. And what I was feeling at this time was, it has been 2 years since I've seen my family and my friends, and I do know that this year I am going home for Christmas, and that made me very, very happy. And I started to kind of like think about that, and at first that was like all it was going to be, and So one minute I'm thinking about the elation of, yes, I get to go home and see my family, and that's wonderful. And then I'm thinking about how freaking blessed I am to have these legends have recorded with me on this. That just made me feel a ripping sensation of both elation and total despair. And that is Love Come Around, man. That's how I wrote that song.
Like a lot of his singles that followed, Pete's Love Come Around is only available on his Bandcamp page. Noreen Braun came on to talk about her album, December Falls, a mix of covers and original songs.
I was really fortunate to receive a grant from Showcase BC. It's in our province for artists to write, to do some writing. And so I just thought, I love Christmas. My mother, who loved Christmas, unfortunately, my mom passed away this year, but she always wanted me to do a proper album. So I was able, I was so grateful that I could do that while mom was still here. So it was just trying to think about positivity. I think because we were going through such a hard time, everybody on the planet, I just wanted to think about a time when, you know, Christmas is usually a time of sharing and joy. And that was sort of how I wanted to focus writing. And then in the summer, I wanted to record and have some of the musicians who I knew weren't working come in and do something positive during the summer to release last winter.
And one of the things that I really loved about December Falls is the variety of music, and the original songs that are on there are all kind of like, the themes of them are things that you that aren't done a lot in Christmas songs.
Right.
And I thought this is terrific because it's really something fresh and new. I don't want to go track by track because people should go check out the album if they haven't already. So, but there are a handful of them that I'd like to ask you about. And if you can tell me anything about them, what inspired the song, or if there's a story behind it or that kind of thing. Is that okay?
Sure. Sounds good. Thank you, Ben.
All right. Sure. Let's start with Mistletoe Blues. And I got to tell you, I love the blues. Oh. And that you've got Huggy Bear Leonard helping you out there on the blues harp, yeah, is very cool. There are some songs about mistletoe, but not about the blues side of it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one who didn't have someone to kiss under a mistletoe some parts of my life. So I think most people can relate to that, you know, wanting that someone and they're not there. And then certainly in that song, I sort of took the lack of connection with the partner that I was meeting in under the mistletoe. Yeah. So mistletoe is definitely, I think, something I wanted to go for the sad side of the blues. So it's definitely suits a blues feeling.
Noreen released an acoustic Christmas EP after this, taking four tracks from the album and offering up stripped down versions. And a few months ago, she released the non-Christmas album Journey Toward Wilderness. Jeff Fowler came on to talk about his new EP, Just in Time for Christmas.
That's where I first started singing, was, you know, church services on Christmas Eve. My very first solo, you know, as a fourth grade little kid, was the little drummer boy in a Christmas service. And so Christmas for me has always meant Christmas songs and music. But it's also the case that what inspired this was, I like to say, procrastination, because when we were working on the Air Nostalgic, it was a Christmas, it was Wes and I got together and it was like December 23rd. It might have even been December 24th. And we were working on sort of the hard labor of the overdubs of the 80s stuff. And we weren't feeling it. And I had this idea for Christmas of My Heart. And so instead of doing what we were supposed to do, we instead wrote Christmas of My Heart and got started on the production of that, which, you know, then sort of spawned the idea of a Christmas album. And we were kind of heading towards finishing the Christmas album when the pandemic hit. And so we put it aside and waited. And so then this year, obviously, we're releasing it. And it includes both Christmas of My Heart, as well as two other originals, Just in Time for Christmas. And then one called Frosty the Snowman is Dead, which is a bit of a play on our environmental situation here on Earth. And we have a video we're gearing up to release for Frosty the Snowman is Dead, which is pretty fun. We had a stuntman dress in a Frosty costume and run around Hollywood and get you know, all sorts of footage of Frosty on the run.
Since then, Jeff has released a bunch of singles, including a few Christmas-themed ones. North Pole Prison Blues, Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year, and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. David Browning joined me to talk about his original album, Christmas Presents.
Merry Christmas, yeah, that was the goal, was for it to be sort of heartwarming, sing-along. And my producer, when he got hold of my demo, he sort of took it in a kind of what I might say is a sort of Toy Story direction. And yeah, I'm very happy with it. It's a fun track, and it does, it was a song I wrote very quickly, actually, while I was conceiving the album. It sort of just came through me within 5 minutes. And then the lyrics afterwards took some time, but it was, the inspiration for it was just there, and it just felt like it was the right thing to do as the lead single.
I know the first time that I heard it, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, the opening line, as you talk about how long it has been since January, and it absolutely resonates, because it does seem like this has just been one of those years that seemed like it has lasted a decade.
Yeah. It certainly has. It's been such a strange time for everybody. So I was hoping to speak to that and just bring some cheer and hopefully move forward and see some light at the end of the tunnel with COVID and everything else that's happening.
Since then, David's released a bunch of singles, including last year's Haunted House Party, which you'll hear again this October when the sounds of Christmas becomes the sounds of Halloween. Speaking of the sounds of Halloween, I've gotten to talk to a couple artists that have put out mostly, if not all, Halloween music. Fawn came on to talk about her Christmas and Halloween music.
You know, like everybody, we all love Thriller and Monster Mash and Purple People Eater and Ghostbusters and Somebody's Watching You, you know, all those great songs. And I've always loved Halloween, and I've always loved Christmas. Those are my two favorite holidays. So I thought, you know, there just aren't enough Halloween songs out there to choose from. And I wanted more songs like Monster Mash in that vein. And so I just decided to write them. And that's how it happened.
And then you followed it up a year later, or maybe 2 years later, with another EP that was called Ghoulish Ghosts. Was this leftover material from the first one, or just something more that you wanted to do?
It was not leftover. It was definitely something to do. I had only done an EP of 5 songs. And I thought, well, you know, there's more in me. So let's do another EP of 5 songs. And so that's what I did. And Ghoulish Ghost was a really quick, literally took me 20 minutes to write with the words and music. And it's one of my favorite songs, actually. But I just love all the spooky stuff. So,
and this wasn't just like a lark or a fad or something. Ghoulish Ghosts won the Great American Song Contest.
That was super neat. That was one of the highlights of my life. I was just so excited to have that recognition. And when I won the following year, a finalist position for Monster House, that was also super cool. I just really appreciated the recognition of those spooky songs.
Since then, Fawn has released a ton of new music, including last year's single, Jingle Bell Blue. And delving into more Halloween music, the band The Stevens joined me to talk about their music. And by the way, all of their songs are inspired by the works of Stephen King.
I actually started getting into Stephen King because of John back when we were in college. He was reading It and The Dark Tower. And I remember him showing me The Gunslinger, and it just, the verbiage in the book was unique. It was, you know, terms like ka, and that's the one I can think of, but like, that's kind of a major like theme in the Dark Tower books. And so I got turned on to it, started reading those and read through all of them. This huge series. It's like 7 or 8 books. I think it's 8 books now. And then a lot of his books touch on that series, but I was reading through it, I think the second time through. And as I was reading just for kicks, I was writing songs based on scenes or characters in those books. And I thought that would be fun to have like an album for each book. And I was just coming up with it in my head. I didn't write any of it down. I didn't, you know, record anything. It was just a way to occupy my mind as I was reading, and in all different genres. But then, you know, we got together, Chase and I met at where I work. He was a customer there and we could just started talking. I could tell he probably liked music off the regular beaten path. And so we started talking about music. And I said, do you like punk rock? He says, yes, I like punk rock. And so that was like, all right. So we had a good long conversation and ended up exchanging information. We tried out for a band that was, you know, like Josh mentioned, when the world kind of shut down, yeah. We tried out for a band right before all that happened. So nothing ever came of that. And then, you know, then we got together with another guy to just play some covers of some Screeching Weasel and the Queers and things like that. And that's kind of in conjunction with when Josh and I made a connection. So I was like, sweet, we got a drummer, you know, and it was just an excuse to get together, drink beer and have fun, you know, do something other than just, you know, watching a movie or whatever. Eventually I was like, well, maybe we could do some original stuff. And I don't know exactly what happened, but I think it was that same kind of concept when I was reading through the Dark Tower book the first time. It could just be like a shtick band, essentially, you know, have our theme. You know, it's something to grab people's attention because everybody knows Stephen King for the most part. You know, they at least know Pennywise, you know, Shawshank Redemption and Stand By Me and Green Mile. Those are movies, you know, that a lot of people have seen or know, and they're not even scary movies, you know, but they're still in the canon of Stephen King. And so people know him. And I've seen the success of certain bands like the Jasons, for instance. They all dress like Jason Voorhees. You know, they wear the mask and, you know, they sing about Camp Crystal Lake. And so it was kind of in that vein of what we were shooting for. And yeah, we wrote, I Want to Take Carrie Back to the Prom. I think that was the first song we wrote, guys.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And then and it just went from there. You know, we just started cranking some out and eventually got to booking some shows, and we're just having fun with it. So
yeah, and when Seth and I first met that day, we were talking about an idea he had for a themed punk rock band called The Dads, where it was all about, you know, being a father and the crazy stuff and silly things that happen, and just kind of thinking of some funny ways that we could connect with, you know, other parents and everything. And then he just kind of texts me out of the blue. He's like, you know, I kind of squashed The Dads. I want to do a Stephen King themed band, and started sending me song ideas and snippets and everything. And it just kind of took on a life of its own and grew from that little seed.
Covering Halloween music as well as Thanksgiving and Christmas, Adela joined me to talk about the project she's involved in featuring holiday music for kids.
Dennis McKinley, who's the owner of the brand, he had come to me and he said he had this, you know, has this brand All-Star Kid, and do I want to be involved? And it was a no-brainer. The branding was amazing. The kids are adorable. He was already on this like great path. And musically, I was like, I'm in. Like, what do we need to do? And then he had this crazy idea of like this mashup holiday scenario. So we spent the summer just collaborating with different producers, writers, artists, like a team of people. And just started making these records. And it turned out to be so fun. You know, we weren't trying to reinvent the wheel necessarily, but we wanted to put our own spin on these songs and just kind of keep those fun holiday elements in while creating something of our own that, you know, our brand could say, well, these are our songs.
Now, I had mentioned that, you know, how people like to put artists in boxes and in specific categories. And you've shown that you like and are comfortable in lots of different genres, but holiday music geared to kids seems like a completely different kind of thing. How big a challenge was this? How different from what you usually write?
You know, it was just so fun for me that it wasn't a big challenge as far as recording and writing. It's just like going into that, you know, when you write music for adults, let's say, or commercial music, you're thinking like so deeply about like, does this make sense? Does this sound cool? Like, how is this going to be perceived? But with the kids' music, Dennis was kind of the guy that picked out all the great beats. Like, he picked out the music and was like, here you go. And so that's half the battle, is getting this great production for kids. And then once hearing the songs, it just came naturally. Like, you could hear the little you know, on Spooky, it was like you heard the Halloween fun in that. So it's like, let's talk about everything Halloween on here. You know, it could be kooky, wild, crazy, and we're just going to have fun. There's no rules.
Returning to Christmas music, TJ Winterbrook from the band Winterbrook joined me talking about their Christmas singles and being an artist that only releases Christmas music.
Christmas music has always been something very special for me. I've always liked it. I've always liked putting it on in December, everything from the crooners to the modern cheesy, if I may say that, the more mainstream, shall we say, songs that have been released, as well as alternative and indie Christmas tunes that come out. I think as a genre, Christmas music is it's something you can really do anything in. Anything goes, really. And I think that's something that attracts me. When I was perhaps writing songs in the past, I always felt a little bit constricted, perhaps, by the genre that I was writing in. So if I'm writing a rock song or an indie alternative songwriter tune, I'd come up with a melody and I might think, well, that's a bit too poppy, or that's a bit too much of this or that. But with Christmas music, really, it doesn't matter. Anything goes. And I like that. Also, I like the fact that there's so much freedom with the subject matter in Christmas songs. And I think, you know, even though a lot of people will deny it and say that they don't like Christmas and they don't like Christmas music, I think inside of all of us there's a kid who remembers Christmas as a child and wants to relive those moments as much as they can. And I enjoy putting that into my songs. So with my main single this year, My Boyfriend is a Snowman, the first release that we made, really it was just about bringing the sort of magical themes that we listen to in songs like Frosty the Snowman, Walking in the Air, things like that. But putting it within the context of more of an adult song to enable us to all reconnect with that child inside us who loves Christmas.
Since then, his band Winterbrook has released the EP Christmas is Coming to Town and the singles Christmassy and Christmas Feels Blue. Jane Monheit came on to talk about finally getting around to recording her second Christmas album, which was called The Merriest.
Oh, I've wanted to make another one since I made the first one. I was just waiting until it was long enough. You know, I knew I had to wait at least 10 years. And then I ended up waiting 7 more. You know, it's been 17 years total just because situations in the business and other projects I was working on and stuff like that. But I've been waiting to make this record because I am that crazy Christmas woman. Like, I am obsessed. I put my tree up every year on November 4th. This is the day after my birthday. So it's November 4th, the tree goes up. And yeah, you know, I'm obsessed with Christmas. So, and I love these songs so much. They're beautiful tunes. They're part of the Great American Songbook. It's just, we only get to really enjoy them for like a month or two out of the year. So I've really been looking forward to doing this record for a long time.
There are plenty of songs on the new album that everybody will recognize, but the lead single isn't very well known. How did you come to choose Christmas Stay With Me for the album?
Well, that song will be very easily recognizable to musical theater fans because that is a song from a beautiful, one of my favorite musicals of all time by Cy Coleman. Came out in the 90s, or I think when I was maybe in high school. It's called, maybe junior high, I don't know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure the exact year. It's called City of Angels, this fabulous musical, amazing songs. And this tune, Stay With Me, is from the musical. The Christmas lyric was written separately, does not appear in the show, but was written, I believe, for Liza Minnelli to sing maybe on a television event or something like that. The lyricist, David Zippel, is a friend of mine. So he sent me the tune and was like, man, do you think you might like to record this? And I was like, yes, this tune is gorgeous. This would be beautiful. You know, so then we threw on the strings, Joel Fromm on tenor saxophone, who is probably one of the great, not probably, definitely one of the greatest living tenor players. Up there with Joshua Redman and Mark Turner and everybody, you know. Yeah, so it became this beautiful, lush track. You know, we decided to make it a bossa nova instead of just a straight ahead ballad. And it's gorgeous and romantic.
I think Jane has a new album on the way, and she just released a new single, Whatever Lola Wants. Al Petrelli from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra came on to talk about TSO's upcoming tour and what fans can expect.
Paul said, he goes, I don't know anything, if it's going to have commercial success or it's going to be a hit. Because I just want to create great art. And it was so refreshing for me to hear that. Because I spent a lot of years doing a lot of records and a lot of sessions for, you know, very, you know, successful artists. God bless every one of them. But he was a man who was more, he just wanted to make a great art form. And he wanted to make a musical statement. And I found it so new and so refreshing. I was like, dude, I'm in. And then he put up Mozart's 24th Symphony. He gave me the score. And I'm like, ah, okay. And fortunately, I could read really well, so I started reading it. And he's looking at me, goes, you can do that? I'm like, yeah, I got you, you know. And it was just that we became the best of friends. He was my big brother, my boss, my producer, and influence on me like no other. And I spent a quarter of a century with the man and loved every second of it.
It had to be tough to get everybody together to keep this going after he passed away. It's already been 5 years. I can't believe it.
I know. Well, listen. He and his wife were there from the beginning of the beginning of the beginning, you know, even before my beginning. His daughter was born into it. You know, the family was involved pretty much from the jump. And one of the things Paul always said to everybody, he goes, I just want this to live long past me, or long past all of us. You know, I don't think any of us were prepared for that to become a reality. You know, certainly his wife, his daughter, his immediate family. But they've been amazing saying, no, the legacy is alive and well. The vision, keep moving forward, you know. So I'll miss him every second of every day, but I know that every time I play a note from one of his songs or a pyroblast goes off, he's somewhere on my left shoulder. We're okay, you know.
I have heard so many rumors about things that he was working on for future Trans-Siberian Orchestra projects, new Christmas music, a Mozart-related project, something about the Romanovs. Any truth to any of those? Anything that you can talk about?
All of it's true, dude. He would never stop writing, you know? I mean, you know, he and his family would be brainstorming ideas, storylines, rock operas, you know, and just, it was like overwhelming how much information would come back at you. He's like, I got an idea. And we get in the studio, and here's a track for a Romanov record. He was like what became Beethoven's Last Night album, you know? So much material hasn't been finished yet, and that's what we pretty much do the rest of the year. I mean, this tour takes a big chunk of time to get kind of up and running, and then obviously the tour itself. But not too long after we get off the road, it's back in the studio. Let's bring these to life. You know, a lot of stuff is getting closer and closer to be finished. You know, I'm going to leave that up to the O'Neill family and management to decide what happens with it, but I'm just thrilled to know that every time, you know, we get back in the studio, you know, there's a song with a rough vocal of his on there, and it's like he's back in the room with us, you know? And I spent enough of my life sitting next to the man knowing, okay, well, I was well-trained by him. I kind of think I know exactly what he'd be looking for here. You know, I can't wait for the world to hear some of the music that they haven't heard yet, because it really is beautiful and special.
Well, I think most people, when they think of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, they think of all the wonderful Christmas music. But there's also three really amazing albums that have nothing to do with Christmas. You mentioned Beethoven's Last Night, and there's Night Castle and Letters from the Labyrinth. Any of that stuff that will be coming up on this tour?
Yeah, I'm not going to give it away.
Okay.
But yes, we're doing songs this year that we've never performed live before. And again, with such a vast catalog of completed material, we have a lot to draw from. And then with some things that haven't been released yet, you know, there's a couple of things that are kind of like floating around, that'd be fun to play, you know.
That's one of our most listened to episodes. While no announcement has been made yet, as far as I know, I do believe the Trans-Siberian Orchestra will be on tour again later this year in celebration of the 20th anniversary of their album, The Lost Christmas Eve. Todd Elmore and Steve Everett from Rock by the Sea came on together to talk about their Christmas releases, including that year's release, their 12th Christmas music compilation.
You know, we get music from a variety of sources. At first, it was really just my circle of friends, or even the charity's circle of friends, which is how Steve got involved. Steve's had Steve, how many? Two or three songs on the series? I forget.
Yeah, I've done three of them, and I write mine each time just so we don't have to pay any licensing fees.
That's helpful too. That is also helpful as well. So, you know, it started the first year or two was really me reaching out to friends or friends of the charity or through other board members and, you know, hey, do you know anyone has a Christmas song? And some of it is just, you know, like Steve just mentioned, some of it is custom. Like this year we have a Run Katie Run is a group here out of Atlanta and they wrote a song exclusively for our record. So it's exclusive to us. It was written for the charity. And as Steve mentioned, they donate it to us so that we don't have to go out of pocket to pay for licensing, which we do on other songs. There are lots of songs that we have to pay the licensing for, which is fine. Also, the Farleys, which is a husband and wife team out of Madison, Wisconsin. Mike Farley is a music publicist, and I've hired him over the years to help publicize different projects that I've been involved in. And he uncovered a song that he had written in college, a Christmas song that he'd written in college, but never recorded it. And he recorded it this year exclusively for our record.
There is going to be a Rock by the Sea charity event this December, but no word yet on whether there will also be a new compilation this year. Matt Molnar joined me to talk about several of his projects, including his collection of some Christmas songs.
I'll tell you, probably I was so scared to embark on Christmas music. It's like singing the national anthem. You can really screw up your career if you do that wrong.
Yeah.
And it's taking on Christmas music because like your mind has Sinatra's Jingle Bells in your head or Bing's, you know, White Christmas. Those are arrangements that sort of live. And then there's been a million of them processed since then. And I thought, if I'm going to do that, like, I've got to rearrange it. Like, it's got to be a complete adventure. Every track has to be different. Instrumentation. I still got to keep the context of the melody. And I just, it was quite an adventure. And it ended up, I'm really proud of it, but I was really scared. Sometimes I still get scared listening to it.
Oh, and you got to deal with the ghosts of everybody who has recorded when you're doing covers,
right?
You have to, you know, it's almost like they're there in the studio with you. One of the songs on your album, Some Christmas Songs, is Do You Hear What I Hear? And I'm sure for a lot of people, they think of Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
When you mention that song, that has to be daunting that I'm going to sing this song that Bing Crosby sang. Or if they're younger, they think of Whitney Houston.
Right.
Again, really big shoes to fill.
It's true. Yeah. With that track, like I was going to sing that. And then I realized I hired a vocalist who works with me. She was on tour with Pink Martini. I don't know if you're familiar with that band years ago. Yeah. She's a background vocalist. I've used some of their players and I wanted her to sing it. So I wrote it from a context of making it very syncopated. I wrote the bass line first of all things before I did anything. And then I thought, I don't think I can pull that off. I don't think I feel comfortable with my arrangement. So I asked if she would do it and she agreed, thankfully. But you're right. Like, it's like, oh my goodness. Did I do justice to Silver Bells? I mean, I took it from 3/4 time and made it into a Latin kind of chipmunky thing. And like, is that going to make people angry at me? You know, I got to sing it my way. You have to sing it your way.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You can't sing it. The more, I think what happens in a lot of Christmas songs, I listened to a lot several years prior to doing it. And then I went on a complete fast. Chuck Mangione used to say, like, you got to fast from music while you're writing it and arranging it so you don't plagiarize. And I just remember, like, I don't have that particular, I'm not a crooner or I'm not, you know, maybe I'm a little musical theater here, maybe I'm a little country there. And I've got to find, like, how can I sing this without it making everybody angry at me?
Sarah Partridge came on to talk about how, because of her name, it was only a matter of time before she recorded a Christmas album.
I wanted to do something light and fun, to be honest. The Beautiful Minds was really intense. It was really, really intense. And Kabir said, Sarah, what do you say we just do a Christmas album? You do 8 songs, you make them your own, and you just have fun, you know? And I said, yeah, that sounds great. And it was great because the last 3 albums I've done have been really intense because it's all been not Janice's, but original material or really different arrangements and very carefully crafted. And this was just kind of like, let's pick some songs and go for it. And the only challenge of this album was the 12 Days of Christmas. So being that the album is called A Partridge in a Pear Tree, I thought, well, I've got to do the 12 Days of Christmas, but I don't really like that song that much. I mean, it's kind of repetitive and a little boring. And do people really like that song about the partridge in a pear tree? So really, until the week before we recorded, I said to Tim Horner, my drummer, Timmy, like, what can I do with this? Because he's a real idea guy and a great arranger himself. And he said, all right, let's think about this. And he said, what if we take a different group, like we get past the five golden rings, and then we do a different groove for everyone after that, but still coming back to da 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 bum 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 ba da 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 and a partridge. And it worked.
Sarah's currently working on a new album, and unfortunately, that's all the info I have right now. So I don't know what kind of album it is or when it might be out. Blaine Howard came on to talk about his album, Christmas in the Car.
I grew up in Arkansas. My mom's side of the family is all in Southeast Kansas. That's actually where I was born. And so we would wake up as a kid every Christmas morning. We'd open presents as a family. We'd have breakfast. And then we would drive 7 hours to my grandmother's house in Kansas to go spend Christmas with them. We'd get there by Christmas dinner, have all the food, open presents, all that stuff. And to us, it was normal for Christmas. I know that a lot, you know, my wife's family, they're all mostly in the same town. So they'd just maybe drive across town. But for us, Christmas Day was a 7-hour drive in the car. And, you know, looking back, it was just something that we did. It wasn't something that was a pain to us. It wasn't something that was annoying. We just were so excited to get there and see our grandparents and see our cousins and all that. So that's kind of the story behind the song. It's really us getting up at, you know, early in the morning to do all that and drive to see my grandparents.
Since then, Blaine's released several singles, including Aviators, which came out just last month. Bonnie and Diane from the band Keith came on to talk about their single, Christmas Magic.
In 2019, just before COVID, as you can imagine, right? We said, you know what? Yeah. Let's have a legacy of Christmas material, and let's start with at least releasing our first single or maybe an album. We actually started talking about doing an album right off. However, as many of us were interrupted, COVID kind of interrupted that process a bit, right? So Diane would tell the story, and I think you should tell, Ken, the story of how that got written, and then ultimately we recorded it, but you and Bob were writing the song, right?
Well, yeah, I can remember I was on the phone with Walt and you, Bonnie, and talking when Walt first said, hey, we need to do, let's do a Christmas song and possibly an album. Why don't you pull up some of the old songs and see what we can do about changing lyrics, maybe, you know, come up with something new, rewrite it. And, Bob had written a song, and I had written the lyrics several years prior to that, and it was called what was that called? Something
must magic. Be magic.
It must be magic. Yeah, and I said, "Oh, how about that one? We'll call it Christmas Magic." And Walt and Bond said, "Oh yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that." And so then COVID hit, and so. Bob and I, we did tweak the song musically. He changed a few chords, and I actually came up with the bridge melody, but we couldn't get together because of COVID. Didn't want to get together indoors, so he and I would drive. We live in the same town, so we would drive to medical kind of facility on the weekend, and it's the parking lot was absolutely empty, so we would meet there and be outside, and he would bring his guitar, and I'd record it on my phone, and then go home, and then we'd tweak it a little, and we so several weeks in a row, we would go and meet in this parking lot and wrote the song that way.
Since then, they've released the Christmas singles Dance Around the Christmas Tree and Letters to Nick. Michael Brandmeier came on to share the story behind his single, I Saw an Angel.
There's a hospice home founded by Catholic sisters in eastern Wisconsin. And my mother was in a coma, dying of Alzheimer's. She went into coma on December 22nd. And it was Christmas Day. And we were just sitting around the home. You know, she loved Christmas. So we were really, as you imagine, going to be depressed. This is a while ago. So it's all good. But you can imagine we were kind of very depressed and just going, we can't believe Mom loves Christmas. And she's here, you know, down the hall in the coma. And this is, I'm just going to give you a little, maybe more than you need in this, but a staff nurse came down. I never met her. Came sitting, sat down to talk to my brother and I. And you got to realize this hospice home is only 12 rooms, founded by nuns, sisters of St. Agnes. And so it's very small. And I never saw this nurse before, but she just said the front door rang. And we were like, okay, big deal. Why are you telling us this? She goes, front doorbell rang and nobody was there. And we're like, where are you going with this? Because I'm kind of grieving here. And she said, well, we hear around the home when the front doorbell rings, we think it's an angel warning us the patient's going to pass away in the next 2 to 3 days. And we were like, as you can imagine, get the heck out of here. What are you talking about? But she went on to tell us all these angel stories. Anyways, I'm telling you this for a reason. Because 2 hours later, my little brother comes in, my other brother, from Minneapolis. He waves me outside the hospice home, and there's this pretty tree scene out there. He goes, isn't that tree scene cool? I said, yeah, it's really cool. So I took eight shots of that tree. And then this is Christmas night. They take the picture of the tree scene on my little iPhone 4S, right? So it's a tiny little screen. So two nights later, I'm still in the home. My mom's still hanging on. And I decided to let people on Facebook know where I've been because I've been kind of incognito. And I just randomly posted one of the 8 shots and put it on Facebook and said, seen from outside my mom's hospice home, figuring that will tell everybody where I am, why I'm there. Anyways, that night, my mom had a breathing episode where she stopped breathing for like 45 seconds. And so we thought she was gone. And I just looked at my brother, one of my other brothers, Jimmy, who's in there. And I said, Jimmy, I'm staying overnight. So I stayed overnight in a cot, like a foot away from her bed, and Jimmy did too, and he was sleeping. It's 3:30 in the morning, just like the song, the first verse of the song says. And I am looking at the post of the Facebook post I did about, 8 hours or 9 hours earlier, and I was thinking, wow, people really like this shot. And I heard, I swear, I'm not into seances or any kind of this stuff. I heard a voice inside the room go, look closer, and I literally looked around the room. My mom's in a coma. Jimmy's sleeping. I enlarged the photo and I went, oh my God, there's an angel in it.
Michael's still working on the book based on his experience from the song I Saw an Angel. And he's released several singles since he came on the podcast, including We Will Never Know earlier this year. Mark Winter joined me to talk about his single, Christmas in the Air.
You know, I was thinking about it and I said, you know, I'd like to record a Christmas song because the best thing about them is that they come back every year. So, you know, you write a song and, you know, people like it. And yeah, maybe they hear it, you know, years, you know, down the road once or twice. But when you write a Christmas song every year, there it is. It's back. You know, and I didn't want Mariah Carey to have all the fun. So I figured, all right, let me write one too.
What's really neat about your song, you kind of have a tribute to a Christmas carol in there.
Yeah, I figured I would throw some Easter eggs into this Christmas song. So production wise, it's not in the lyrics, but it's in the production. I have elements from the past and the present and, I don't know, maybe the future in the song. So if you listen carefully, you see on the left side, there's a guitar riff from the 70s. And then at the very beginning, there's the intro is done with like a 80s synth. And then the middle, the bridge part where the sax comes in, I have a tribute to the girl groups of the 60s. And then in the right side of the song has, more... current keyboard sounds to be the present and future sounds. So I just did that as a little fun thing.
Mark has released several singles since then, including Love Is In Your Eyes earlier this month. Bob Sorois came on to talk about his new album and how his appreciation of John Denver has guided his music career.
If we kind of scroll back to the 80s, you know, during my my teenage years, rock, you know, the rock 80s thing, the hard rock metal stuff was definitely big. I was into that, and that's what the band I was in did. And even in the 90s, the band I was in, we did I wouldn't say it was heavy metal, but it was definitely more of a rock oriented thing. But about 1996 or so, I was kind of reintroduced to John Denver. I mean, I really hadn't heard his music since I had been a kid because my parents listened to it around the house all the time. And as I recall, the story is that my parents were looking for a new CD player and a new component system. I helped them pick it out, and they wanted some CDs. So one of the CDs that they ended up buying was John Denver's Greatest Hits. So of course I'm hearing that, and I'm thinking, hey, there's some really cool tunes here. This guy was great. And so at that point, I just said, hey, I really need to get into this. I need to start learning how to play this kind of stuff. Turns out I had to take a huge step back to do that. It's a whole different way of playing. And I did. And then over a period of years, I redefined my entire direction, and that's what I became. And yeah, so kind of a game changer, I guess.
You know, for anybody listening who wasn't there, John Denver's Greatest Hits was probably one of the, I don't have the stats in front of me, but it was probably one of the biggest selling albums of the 70s. He was huge. He had tons of hits. He was on TV often, right, with his own specials.
Yep.
Guesting on other people's specials. He was everywhere, and winning awards. I mean, he was huge in the 70s, and it's just amazing. You can't really talk about music from the 70s with not mentioning John Denver.
No, not really. And I agree with you. I mean, he clearly became a superstar at the time. And in fact, I recall that they used to compare his rise to fame to, you know, I guess artists like Elvis and even the Beatles. I mean, to a degree, although you really can't compare too many people to the Beatles. But
right,
John Denver, he was the thing at the time. And his music, it was different, you know. I mean, he came out, I think, at the right time with that right music. I think if you had an artist come along today with his talent doing the same kind of thing, I don't think it would stick. I just think that time period coming out of the folk movement in the, you know, late 60s, coming into the 70s, you had all these great folk players going on, like James Taylor and Jim Croce. And then you had, you know, Simon and Garfunkel going on. You had some really cool, eclectic types of styles and genres that were acceptable at the time. And John Denver kind of, I think he just sort of, you know, came right into that period. It worked for him, and he just became huge. And you know, you mentioned stats. His Greatest Hits album, I believe, if memory serves, because I'm published by the same publisher as John Denver, with Cherry Lane Music's RCA. So I kind of have information on that stuff I've gathered over the years. And basically, his Greatest Hits album, I believe, was a bigger seller than any Elvis album that had ever been released. Wow. So, yeah, and this was back in the 70s. I'm sure by today's standards, I have no idea what those numbers are, but they're huge.
Bob is working on a new Christmas album, but that one's still a year away. While Guy Maeda released a Christmas single a couple years ago, he also released a Christmas album back in the 90s where the songs were all sung by frogs.
I actually have kind of a novelty hit. We did an album called Froggy Christmas. I don't know if you remember that one, but it's been like 26 years ago, I think, already. But we were on all over the place on different radio stations, and I was interviewed on the Today Show and all the news stations and Entertainment Tonight and People Magazine. But it was frogs singing Christmas songs.
That was one of the things I was going to ask you about, if you were that same person, because I have this here.
Yeah.
And I vividly remember that. It was like in the mid, maybe late 90s.
Yeah.
I worked at a radio station in Cincinnati, and that was very funny, and we played that. I don't remember if we played that particular song that I just played, but I remember when that came out, and it's Christmas songs performed by frogs.
Yes. Oh, and my crazy ideas.
by the way, the Frogless single that came out a couple years ago was called The Magic of Christmas. Ken from the Tell-Alls came on to talk about the string of Christmas singles his band released in 2023.
I had been winding down my seasonal job, which ends, I work at a venue here in town, and was winding down around this time of year. And I had it in my mind, you know, that I was like, I've been meaning to write more Christmas songs and record them. And I was just coming down to the wire, but it wasn't, I wasn't deterred. I'm like, I'm going to do this. And so between, again, around this time, early November till December 9th, I think was the official release date on It's Christmas Time. I got that one done first and in time enough to get it to the streaming platforms to where it was actually before Christmas. So pushed that one forward and had success in that. But the other two, I just launched on the website. I didn't have time. You know, there's a lead time. If the listeners don't know about releasing music digitally, you know, you submit it, and then there's a lead time to get it actually into the Spotify's of the world. So I didn't have that lead time. So I figured I would just wait till the following year, which is 2023. Now the Magic of Christmas and Christina Christmas Baby are coming out on all streaming platforms. The Christina tune is coming out on November 17th. And the Magic of Christmas is coming out the following week on Black Friday, which was strategic because lyrically in that song, The Magic of Christmas, it kind of plays into that consumerism in a way of Black Friday. So I figured, well, I'm just going to offset that one and just, you know, for the fun of it, had that come out a week later on the 24th of November.
This past April, the Tell-Alls released a song to commemorate the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby. It's called The Greatest Day, and you can check it out along with their Christmas songs on their Bandcamp page. Lisa Bialas released her first Christmas album last year, an entire set of original songs called At Christmas.
I love the sentiment of this tune. To me, the lyrics, it's like something I would have said. You know, if you want some candy, I'll bring you some candy. And it's shake hands with Santa Claus, but I say shake hands with Mrs. Claus. So I'm stepping into the boots here of Mrs. Claus and, you know, taking care of everybody, feeding them and giving them candy and flowers and tie. And it says, I love you, and I'm going to bring. I just love singing that. It just feels so good to say that, you know, to sing that.
Now, I don't want to spoil it for everybody going track by track for everything, but can you share the story behind Lulu Magoo?
Oh, Lulu. You know, that tune was going through my head for so long since I got this cute little dog. Lulu Magoo, she'll unconditionally adore you. That's all the farther I've got. That's been in my head. We walk. I say that. Hey, Magoo, you know. And then when it came time for Christmas, I'm like, well, this is the perfect opportunity. I'll just make it a Christmas song. And so that just sort of opened it up. I'd had that idea in my head for a couple of years and didn't really do anything with it. And it just made all kinds of sense to put it on the album.
So Lulu Magoo is kind of, a real person, but a real dog.
She's my little King Charles Cavalier. She's on the back of the album. You'll be able to see her there.
Oh, sweet.
She's got a little, yeah.
Anything in particular about any of the songs we haven't talked about that you think people should know about or would like to know about?
Wait, I don't know. I hope people hear this album and it's their new favorite album. Because, you know, music just it transports you. And my favorite album is the Vince Guaraldi Charlie Brown Christmas album. I have to hear that when it makes me happy. I also love Ella Fitzgerald's Christmas album. But, you know, Christmas is such, it's like emotionally charged times. You can have a great Christmas or you can have a crappy Christmas. You know, you just kind of don't know with life and how it goes on. So I'm hoping that this album, people find it and they're like, oh, I love it. And it's not real long. And I hope they love it and they press, you know, repeat. They want to hear it again over and over. That's what I'm hoping. Well, hoping it brings them as much joy as it did, you know, creating it all.
Well, this was Lisa's first Christmas album. She did record a version of Carol of the Bells a few years back. Aubrey Logan also recorded a version of Carol of the Bells a couple years ago, and you'll find that on her Christmas album, Aubrey Logan Christmas.
You know, my whole life, Christmas, my parents are music teachers, you know, Christmas time is the time when we're busy. It's when you got to put on a show, baby. And church is busy, you know, put on the pageant and do the production. And so we've always put the Christmas tree up in my family, like the week before Thanksgiving. Otherwise, we won't get it up because every weekend after that is rehearsal, tech week, whatever it is we're doing. So it was just natural that we have a Christmas album. And I really do hope to play it for years to come.
Last year was the what are you doing for New Year's Eve?
What are you doing New Year's Eve? Yeah.
And now the album's just out and you've collected these singles that you've released and you've added some new stuff. And it's such a great collection because it really does run the gamut of song styles and emotions from a very gospel-y Go Tell It on the Mountain to James Brown, Santa's Got a Brand New Bag.
Yes.
It's so fun. And as I was listening to this earlier today and I was thinking, you know, the band in the background, and not always in the background, but the band is, I don't want to say makes it, but they make it a lot of fun.
They do. If they don't come up to the fun, it'll feel wrong. But I really, you know, I moved to Austin in 2020, and as soon as I got here, I found, you know, all you got to find is one person. So I found one drummer through a friend, you know, through Instagram. And I reached out and was like, hey, I moved to town. Will you play with me? And who are your favorite bass players, piano players, guitar players? And when you have a drummer as picky as the one I play with here in Austin, you get the best people. So I'm very, very happy. And thank you for noticing.
Oh, certainly. You can't help but notice when you listen to this. I do have to ask you this, and I hope this doesn't, if you haven't thought about it, it doesn't put it in your head and make things difficult next time you're in the studio. But when you record a song like Silent Night or Oh Holy Night, I think of those songs as kind of like performing the national anthem at the World Series. It's a song everybody knows, but you've got to get it right or people are going to be mad.
I've sung the national anthem at a lot of baseball games and a lot of NFL games too. And it is like that. Don't worry. That's way more grave than Oh Holy Night and Silent Night. Because Oh Holy Night and Silent Night is about Jesus Christ who already forgave me. But Americans at a baseball game aren't that forgiving. So, It's actually a whole lot easier.
Aubrey has a new non-Christmas album due this fall, a big band album. And she released a beautiful tribute to her father on the single Blink of an Eye, which came out last month. David Arkenstone has released a lot of Christmas music over the years, but last year's Winterlude was different.
It is something different. It's not holiday music. If I had my blurb up, I'd read it to you, but it's really my impressions of what winter means to me in an idealized way, like not having to drive through the snowy slush or whatever. You know, I think the thing that spearheaded it was we toured in Colorado last year at wintertime, and there was just some beautiful, the mountains, because they're so tall, they're just covered in white the whole time. And it was just beautiful driving from city to city. But then, because I had been kicking around an idea of doing a winter-themed record for a couple of years, and then I just decided to do it. And it's just, you know, I say idealized because, you know, I grew up outside of Chicago till I was about 8, and all we did was just get to play in the snow. You know, we didn't have to worry about, you know, the heating bill. We didn't have to worry about anything. So I go back to some of those memories, and then I spent some time in Switzerland in the winter on a lake, and that just spawned two or three songs because it was just gorgeous. But the thing that about winter, which is so rare when you don't live there, because I live in California and I have to go to winter to find it, and either by touring or just traveling, is when you're in a snowfall, there's no wind, could be in front of your house or in a forest or whatever, and the big flakes are coming down. It's like magic to me. It's like nature's magic because it's so silent. It's just so quiet. You can't even hear. It just absorbs all sound around it. You could be a half a mile from a freeway and you wouldn't hear it. But that's just a moment that I've had two or three times in my life, and that was enough to kind of spur me on.
Well, I don't know yet if David has more Christmas or winter-themed music on the way this year. He did just release a pretty cool non-Christmas album called Quest for the Runestone. Michelle Malone also has a non-Christmas album on the way, but last year she came on to talk about her Christmas album with the Hot Toddies.
When I first started, I was Michelle Malone and Drag the River. We were on Arista, and that's how I was first known as that entity. And it was a really heavy kind of Southern rock band. I mean, we toured with ZZ Top and Leonard Skinner and that kind of music, right? But, you know, I also loved my acoustic guitar. I love Neil Young, and I love Frank Sinatra, and I love Elephant. You know, I just love everything, all music. So the band broke up. Fast forward to 2017, the band broke up in 91. So fast forward to 2017, many, many years later, we decided to have a reunion show, and our original guitarist didn't want to do it. So one suggestion was Doug Keys, because he'd kind of been around the scene for a long time, and he played in a lot of local bands that we played with, and I knew him, but he was really good friends with some other guys in the band. And once he got in there, he was a shoe-in. And then I decided he was the guy I wanted to make my next record with, Slings and Arrows. That was 2018. That was 2018 when it came out. So we're in the studio working on Slings and Arrows. The drummer of that recording session had a jazz trio gig at this restaurant after our session. So we all went down there to watch his gig. Well, they asked Doug to sit in. Doug sat in and proceeded to shred on Autumn Leaves. And all of a sudden, light bulbs were going off in my head, like, woo, all these bright lights. I'm sure steam was coming out of my ears in a good way because the wheels were turning. He came back to the table and I just said, you know, I didn't know you could do that. Oh, yeah, I studied guitar at Georgia State, yada, yada. Okay. Well, guess what? I won a Christmas band and you're the guy. So, you know, we knocked around some names and come up with the Hot Toddies. And then it seems like every year we get a different bass player because I guess we wear them out or something. I think it's hard to carry around that upright bass. And so that's how the Hot Toddies were born.
And if you go to Michelle's website, you'll be able to find even more Christmas music. Speaking of more Christmas music, Quinn Hedges released a Christmas EP about a year ago called Night Divine, an acoustic set featuring songs you know.
This was the first album that I kind of engineered myself, and maybe because it's so stripped down, it's just acoustic guitar. It is probably the least arranged out of all of them. I mean, there's some background vocals, and there's a 12-string that comes in about halfway. I think the general listener, they can tell, I feel, if there's a connection from the artist and the song. You know, there were a bunch of songs that didn't make the cut on this album that I just didn't end up getting that connection with. But Blue Christmas was one of those that wasn't one of my first choices when I first started making my list. And then it just came up and I started playing. I was like, okay, well, this is kind of like a no-brainer. Everything went smoothly with that song.
Quinn released another EP, a non-Christmas one, a couple months ago called Summer in Dewey, which features 6 original songs. Russ Lawrenson has been with The Sounds of Christmas for years, but last year was the first time he appeared on this podcast, and it was just last December, where he talked about a new Christmas project that he has in the works.
I'm working on a children's book that'll be out next Christmas. So there is more Christmas material to come, Ken, not music, but it's Christmas material based on that song I was talking about, Jingles the Christmas Cat. I always thought that the cat should have an origin story like Rudolph or, you know, Frosty the Snowman or something. And so I wrote a story and I've been working with an editor from Random House. We couldn't get it out in time for this Christmas. But the song will have its 30th anniversary next year. So it'll be out in time for that for next Christmas. So I'm really excited about it. So and there's two more books in the pipeline because they apparently to get a book deal, they don't want you just to be a one-shot wonder. They want to have several. So I had to give treatments for two others. So there will be three Christmas books coming in the following year. So because I love Christmas, I think as much as you do.
You can check out both of Russ's Christmas albums, What I Want for Christmas and In the Holiday Spirit, on his website, where there will probably be info soon about his next project. David and April from the band Critical Mass join me to talk about their first ever Christmas album featuring covers and four original songs.
I've always loved Christmas music. I have such a passion for it. In fact, we have a song called Joy to the World, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, which we mashed together, which some people go like, one's in a major key, one's in a minor key. How does that work? But we actually did the demo for that from 2001. And then that sat on my computer in a demo form for 22 years. That's how long a Christmas album has been sitting and percolating in the back of my head. And every time I used to sing a song at church, I'd be thinking, oh, that would be a good song to put on a Christmas album. So it's been there all this time. And Serenity was kind of the album from 2021, kind of marked sort of an end point, because it's got a storyline that has a happy ending. And actually, one of the interesting things is we're turning it into a musical. So we're working with some people to make it a musical. The script's been written already and everything. And one of the things, so it feels like there's a little bit of a completion of some part of Critical Mass. And then I thought, well, now might be the time to do my Christmas album, to fulfill my dream of taking all these songs that I've listened to or have had ideas about and actually record them. I wanted to, every single one of our songs was either a little bit of a different arrangement. So some of our arrangements have been by Christian artists from the past that have been long forgotten. So our O Holy Night, In the Bleak Midwinter, there are variations on beautiful arrangements I've heard in the past. We also have some songs that are more in the jazz arena, like Have Yourself a Little Merry Little Christmas and White Christmas, which was a real stretch for me. I'm a rock singer. I've never done jazz before. And so this is, it was every song I wanted to be, the way we approached every song was that every song had to be different. I didn't want to have anything that sounded like what had been done before. And so that was sort of our philosophy going in. Even the new original songs, everything had to be different thematically or musically from anything that you hear on the radio all the time.
I've noticed on some streaming sites that there are more than one band with that name, and sometimes their music gets on each other's pages. To alleviate any confusion, the name of their Christmas album is Christmas Is Real, and you can find all of their stuff on their website. Another band that is no stranger to Christmas music is 98 Degrees. Jeff Timmons came on to tell me about their new single and the possibility that even more 98 Degrees Christmas music might be on the way.
We had wanted to do a Christmas album because at that time, you know, although, you know, we did incorporate a lot of harmony into our music, you know, a lot of the R&B producers and pop producers were kind of shying away from that. They wanted to more simpler, they wanted simpler arrangements. And so, you know, we, like I said, we started a cappella, doing everything a cappella, and we thought that Christmas music, you know, usually has, you know, it's divided up into parts, tenor, bass, baritone, etc. And we were like, we love the music, and certainly we proposed it to our label. And of course, the label jumps at it because they see it's an opportunity for an annuity, right? Christmas happens every year, yep. They make money from it, and they can sell it every year. And, you know, we just had incredible producers on that. Anders Bag and Antor Birgesson, those guys did a lot of our hits, and they just killed it with the arrangements and orchestration and that. And, you know, at the time, you know, of course, all the critics panned everything we did, no matter what, at that time, even though it had an orchestra and traditional arrangements, they said it was, you know, basically pop garbage or whatever. But it, you know, it ended up being one of the highest Christmas albums of all, selling albums of all time. And so we have that honor. And you know, it's interesting, although a lot of our music and hits it's still recurrent on radio and on the streamers, you see a huge spike at Christmas time and the holiday season every year on all of our social media, which is interesting. It just seems like we're associated with the season, which is amazing.
And after you went on the hiatus and you all were doing your own things, you got back together. And shortly after that, Let It Snow came out, another Christmas album 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, we're proud of that one as well. I mean, we, you know, great arrangements on that one as well. Worked with a really great team out of Australia and had a really good time with that. You know, we feel like that one kind of stands up. It compares to the original and Christmas album we did. And we're just happy that we have like a full embodiment of work in that space, and just very pleased and happy that we can, you know, kind of just show our wares, all of our vocal ability on that. And, you know, it's a sentimental time of the year. And so we love the fact that people can pop any of that music on and enjoy the holidays with us.
That second Christmas album had a version of the first Noel, but you guys have recorded a new version out this season. How did you decide to pick that one to redo?
Well, it's interesting because we were trying last year. I did an arrangement of O Holy Night with a bunch of guys from my group and, you know, one of the guys from Motown and one of the guys from All for One. And it did really well in the charts. It was like top five. And so, you know, it's just there are only so many Christmas songs too, right? That, you know, that people are familiar with. And I had been messing around with an arrangement that we didn't end up putting on that last Christmas album. And a bunch of my friends had liked it and said, you should just put this one out too. So I arranged that one and a good friend of ours named Aaron Ellsworth, who is a great talented vocal producer and arranger as well, tweaked it a little bit. And we actually recorded that in October when we were on our tour. Everywhere after our shows, we're all in hotel rooms, you know, with equipment doing a Christmas song and, you know, and then trying to turn it around in time to get out to the holidays. As you know, you got to have Christmas music. You're supposed to have it into the system in August. Right. So we were getting into the system late, but we really love it. And it's performing well. It just reached 10 this week on the charts. And you know, got another week to hopefully get it up to the top five or even better. But we're pleased with it. We love the arrangement on it.
So when you see that arriving late in the season and still zooming up the charts, does it make you think maybe some more Christmas music might be on the way?
It just seems like something we're going to do for the rest of our career. It's something that works for us and people seem to like it and gravitate toward it. So I don't see us not doing it. I think you're exactly right. We'll probably do more of it.
By the way, the single 98 Degrees released last year was a new recording of the first Noel. Tommy Byrne joined me to talk about the two versions of his Christmas single, one with Gary U.S. Bonds and one without.
Let me see if Gary will sing on it. One, is he available? How busy is he? He's also 84 years young. So I said, his guitar player, who's his musical director, Mark Linebacker, is also got started with Eddie Testa, who was in Eddie and the Cruisers, was his band. So Mark and Eddie played together, and Mark is a good friend. And I reached out to Mark and I said, do you think Gary would do this? I don't want to bother him, but so he provided some emails and I spoke to Gary's daughter, Lori. Lori basically said, Dad's in, what would you like us to do? And I didn't know at the time what, so I basically said, well, we'll have him sing a second verse, we'll have him sing a chorus and another chorus. And that's basically all I can think of right now, because when I first wrote it, I wasn't thinking a duet or anything with it. I was thinking just me as a first person kind of point of view singing the song. So I wasn't even sure if somebody singing on it would work, but it turns out it did. And Gary did a beautiful job. So that came about that way. But Gary is obviously a big hero of mine. All these guys that are on the Jersey Shore. So all these guys were heroes of mine. And I said, I got to get, if we're making a pit stop on the Jersey Shore, stealing Santa Claus's sleigh and making a pit stop, we got to have someone big or someone well known from the Jersey Shore area or somebody that's performed there to sing on this. Who's the guy? I was trying to stay out of it as far as me singing it. I knew I had Gary. This is a rock and roll Christmas song. What do you need me on it for? We're going to raise money for little Steven and the great foundation Teach Rock with it. No one knows who I am. Let's get some guys that people know who they are. And then, you know, Gary sang on it and that was it.
Tommy also has a bunch of other Christmas songs and you can find all of them on his Bandcamp page. Dutch composer and lyricist Bart Zeal came on to talk about his Christmas music, along with a couple songs that we'll be playing in October on the Sounds of Halloween.
I once saw an interview with David Bowie who said the same thing, like, music is just so interesting and exploring all the different genres is just, if you're a musician, that's something you really like to do, and I couldn't agree more. So this version of Phantom of the Opera is actually a hard rock version. I don't usually listen to that, but I like to collaborate with other artists, and this came up. I really like the movies, or the movie. I've seen it a couple of times, and then I got a chance to sing this song with a professional opera singer as well, who would do the female vocals.
Wow.
And yeah, I jumped on it.
And believe it or not, I think that's everybody. Phew. I know this episode is kind of long, but I really appreciate you listening all the way so you could get to hear at least a little bit about all of these artists and their Christmas and or Halloween music. There are just too many to leave links for them all in the show notes, so I've listed all of them on a page on the Sounds of Christmas website, and I put a link for that down in the show notes. And that brings us to the end of episode 199. I have some special guests joining me in a week or so for the 200th episode, and I hope you can join us too. Thanks so much for listening, helping me share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're already listening to the podcast, so my work here is really just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page, which lists most, if not all, of the streaming sites that have the Sounds of Christmas podcast. So you can find your favorite, click on over, then subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. And I'll put a link to that down in the show notes, too. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. If you're listening to this episode on your phone, you can also click the Send Us a Text Message link and connect that way. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.